special meal at their house, and the 11 brothers are there, and he had provided, we'll talk about some of this as we kind of go on, but for one night, all 12 brothers were together for the first time in 22 years. Now, we've kind of been looking from the brothers' perspective over the last couple of weeks. We're going to shift back to Joseph's today. And I want to ask you, first of all, I mean, we're kind of a smaller group here, so I don't have a whole lot of time, but I wonder how hard life was for Joseph right now. Do you ever think he just felt alone? He's serving in a foreign country. He's been there since he was 17 years old. Now, at this point, he's about 38 years old. He's been living in this foreign country, and now he's been the prime minister. And think of the pressure that he's under. He uniquely understood that there was going to be 7 good years followed by 7 really, really bad years, 7 years of huge drought. So for 7 years, he stores up all the grain. He does all that. Now, when his brothers, when they come back the second time, they're about 2 years into the 7-year drought. And I kind of wonder what it was like for him. Do you think he felt the pressure? Do you think he ever caught himself going, have I saved enough? I mean, imagine the pressure that is on him to be, I'm in charge of an entire nation. We have other people from other nations coming to get food from us. That's a lot of pressure for someone. I bet you he feels alone. I bet you he feels like, I can't mess this up. I bet that's a whole lot of pressure. And then in waltzes his brothers, and for the first time in 21 years, 22 years actually, his 11 brothers are together with him. And they, while they don't know it's him, he knows who they are. And they just have a great time together. As we left off last week, they had a meal together. They got a little tipsy together, you know, and it was a night of a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, and a whole lot of things. So this is where we pick up the next morning in Genesis 44, when they're about to give him their grain and send him on their way. And I want you to see what Joseph does here. So verse 1, it says, Joseph commanded his steward, fill the men's bags with as much food as they can carry, and put each one's silver at the top of his bag. Put my cup, the silver one, at the top of the youngest one's bag, along with the silver for his grain. So he did as Joseph told him. At morning light, the men were sent off with their donkeys. They had not gone very far from the city when Joseph said to his steward, get up, pursue the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Isn't this the cup that my master drinks from and uses for divination? What you have done is wrong. When he, meaning the steward, when he overtook them, he said these words to them. And they said to him, why does my lord say these things? Your servants could not possibly do such a thing. We even brought you back from the land of Canaan, the silver we found at the top of our bags. How can we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If it is found with one of us, your servants, he must die, and the rest of us will become my lord's slaves. Isn't that an interesting proposition? They go, we didn't do this. We'll prove it. You could kill whichever one of us has it, and the rest of us will become your slaves. But I love what the steward said in verse 10. He says, what you've said is right, but only the one who is found to have it will be my slave, and the rest of you will be blameless. So each one quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Now, do you think that they're feeling a little cocky, a little confident here? Let's see what happens. The steward, verse 12, the steward searched with the oldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. They tore their clothes, and each one loaded his donkey and returned to the city. You know, I just can't get past this fact that Joseph has probably just had the greatest night of his life over the last 22 years. He is there with his brothers. He is there with the very people that he grew up with. And I have a feeling he's felt alone. I have a feeling he's felt frustrated at times. But he's there with his brothers, the very ones who sold him into slavery. And it's kind of this interesting thing. I wonder if he's having this meal and they're laughing and they're eating together and they're sharing stories and talking about different things. And I kind of wonder if Joseph, I suspect he's sitting there going, man, I've missed this. I kind of wonder as they were eating, remember we talked about last week and how they're at different tables, but I have a feeling that that only lasted during the meal portion and they end up spending time together and they're talking together. And I almost picture Joseph in the background kind of going back against the wall and kind of leaning there and watching his brothers interact. And go ahead, man, look at Judah. Man, I've missed that guy. Look at Simeon. Look at Benjamin. Look at all of this. I think that Joseph is in one of the most hopeful places of his life right now, thinking, hey, could this actually be for real? Could this actually happen? He is full of hope for the first time in a long time. And not only has he just had this incredible night, but I want you to see what his reaction's been with the two visits. Back at Genesis 42, this was the first time they came when Joseph, he's put these tests in front of him, and he's accusing them of being spies. And this is what happens. I want to remind you of it. Genesis 42, verse 21 through 24. They said to each other, not understanding that Joseph knows Hebrew. They've been talking through a translator. But here's what they said to each other. Obviously, we're being punished for what we did to our brother. We saw his deep distress when he pleaded with us, but we would not listen. This is why trouble has come to us. But Reuben replied, didn't I tell you not to harm the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must account for his blood. Now, do you almost picture this? Imagine overhearing that if you're Joseph. And they're talking about you, thinking that you're dead. And they're talking about you. Can you imagine how emotional that was? Did you catch what Joseph does? Let's keep going. They did not realize that Joseph understood them, since there was an interpreter between them. He turned away from them and wept. He turns away from them and just has to cry because he's just been hearing the things that they're saying. Then the second time, the night before, I want you to see what happened. Let's go ahead to that here in verse 40, chapter 43. When Joseph looked up and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, he asked, is this your youngest brother that you told me about? Doesn't even give him a chance to answer. Says, then he said, may God be gracious to you, my son. And Joseph hurried out because he was overcome with emotion for his brother, and he was about to weep. He went to an inner room and wept there. Is there a difference between weeping and crying? Let me tell you, there's an absolute difference between weeping and crying. Anybody can cry. You just have a little tear come down, you're crying. But weeping is every part of you is just crying. Now, is this a bad cry that he has going on? Or is he crying for joyous reasons? Or is he crying because of heartbreaking reasons? What is he crying? Now, I want you to see something here from it. Joseph has been kind of an emotional guy in this, and he's trying to hide it from his brothers because they don't know who he is. You're going to see him cry more often as the weeks go on. We're going to see a couple other times he's going to do that, you know. But I want you to catch this picture here, that he is so hopeful that there's going to be reconciliation, that they can be a family again, so much so that he's crying. When he hears how sorry they are for what they've done to him, he's crying. When he sees his brother that he hasn't seen in 22 years, he has to leave the room so he can break down and just weep. He is so full of hope. You know, and not only is he crying and dealing with all that, but these brothers have passed every single test that he's passed, that every single test he's laid before them. They have passed every single one of them, and that's given him a lot of hope. They've shown their sorrow. They've kind of confessed their sin against Joseph in verse 42. They sense that this is God's doing, that this is God's judgment on him, which is kind of a big deal here, which we'll talk about in a minute. They've proven that they can be trusted in the regards of, he said, go back and bring your younger brother. They've done that. They've done that. They've shown some loyalty to the family. He had Simeon kept as a hostage there, and they came back for him, and they showed that they cared about him. They have been honest when the first time they came and they put the silver back in the sacks, and he said, send them with the money. They came back and they were honest, and they said, we don't know how the silver got back in our sacks. They're being honest, which they haven't actually done before now. You don't see honesty as one of their traits here. They're being honest, and they're showing a care for their dad when he's talking to him. The second time they come back and they said, your father that you talked about, is he well? And you can just see the care and the love that's dripping from their words as they go, yeah, he's doing good. Dad's doing well. And all of it just works on his life. And the one thing that I think has really worked in Joseph's life is the night before, do you remember he has him seated, what we talked about last week, that when the food comes, his younger brother Benjamin gets five times the amount of food that they all got. 10 of the brothers gets like, you know, this amount of food. One brother, Benjamin, gets five times the amount of food. He's showing favoritism to Benjamin. Favoritism is the very thing that caused the brothers to get so mad at him that they tried to kill him and decided to sell him into slavery 22 years ago. And you know what he saw that night? They didn't care. They laughed. They had a good time. I think Joseph is going, maybe these guys have changed. I think he's so full of hope that he can't get past how great things could be again. There's a great verse, a couple of verses in Romans 5, verses 1 through 5. This is what it says. It says, therefore, since we have been declared righteous by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. We have also obtained access through and by our faith into this grace in which we stand. And then it says this, and we rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. Did you kind of catch where their rejoicing is? It's in the hope of the glory of God. Now I want you to keep all that in mind because we need to keep going here from it. It says, not only that, but we also rejoice in our afflictions. All right, now you're talking about hope, but now you're talking about afflictions. we're going to see this laid out. Look at this here. It says, for we know that affliction produces endurance, and endurance produces proven character, and proven character produces hope. This hope will not disappoint us. Did you catch that progression? Affliction produces endurance. Endurance produces proven character, and proven character produces hope. Sometimes this is a weird kind of progression. I want you to think about this. I wish we had more time to talk about it. We don't, so we're not going to get into it a whole lot today. But I want you to see here that proven character is where hope comes from. It comes from the fact when everything's gone wrong, when you have afflictions, but you go, God, help me get through it. God, help me to be there. And that it, God gives you the endurance, and that endurance helps build your character. And you know where that character leads to? Hope. And if there's any one person in all of history where their life was characterized by afflictions leading to endurance, and that endurance leading to a proven character, and that proven character leading to hope, it's Joseph. And he is so full of hope right here. A hope that is not going to disappoint it. So Joseph sets up two more tests before he's going to reveal himself to his brother. Two more things, and we read about them already, but the first one is he's going to test if they're willing to make a stand for their brother. All right? Did you kind of catch that? Let's see that here for a minute, Kristen, if you don't mind. Joseph commanded his steward, check out what he told the steward to do. Fill the men's bags with as much food as they can carry. Put each one silver at the top of his bag. Put my cup. You know that silver one right over there? Put my cup, that silver one, at the top of the youngest one's bag along with the silver for his grain. So he did as Joseph told him. I want you to see something here for a minute, okay? He is testing if the brothers are going to make a stand for each other, if the brothers are willing to stand for what really matters here. Are they willing to make a stand even when it looks like one of them is betrayed them, even when it looks like one of them has done something he shouldn't do? Do you remember why Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers when they wanted to kill him and sold into slavery? I mentioned it earlier. Just because he was dad's favorite. They found him annoying. So he puts this test. He makes Benjamin look guilty. I mean, clearly. You think these brothers are kind of upset when they see that cup in there? Do you think it'd be easy for them to go, Benjamin, you moron! Right? Man, I have a brother. It doesn't matter if it's his fault or not on something. I'm going to blame him. It's the way it works, you know. We're twins. We've done that our whole lives. It's going to continue to happen. So Joseph puts this test in front of him. He wants to go, 22 years ago, you were willing to write me off and sell me into slavery just because you didn't like me. But now, will you stand with your brother because it's the right thing to do? And the second test is a little more subtle. Because the second test isn't about standing up for a brother, but I truly think this second test is about standing up for God. Because notice what he says. Remember, he said, take that silver cup, put it in the bag. Here's what he tells the steward. Once the brothers leave, steward comes back and goes, okay, they've left. I've put the cup in Benjamin's bag. They had gone far from the city. Pick it up in verse 4. When Joseph said to the steward, get up, pursue the men, and when you overtake them, here's what you're going to say to them. Here's what I want you to tell them when you overtake them. Why have you repaid evil for good? Isn't this the cup that my master drinks from and uses for divination? What you have done is wrong. This is a subtle little test here for a minute, okay? Let me ask you a funny question. Do you notice what the words that he has the steward say to him? It doesn't just say, why did you take my silver cup? Did you catch what else it said? We're a small group. You guys can speak up. But we don't have a lot here today. Yell it out. What else does he say? How does he qualify it? Yeah, okay. I told you to speak up, and I heard... The cup that he drinks from, sure, that's what you do with a cup, but he uses it for something for divination. Divination is this big, fancy word. It's a big, funny word here. It's I want to actually read. Divination was the way that they would tell fortunes. It was a practice of fortune telling, usually by reading signs and omens. Actually, in Ezekiel 21, you see that it mentions that there was consulting of idols, the use of arrows, the examining of the liver of an animal. Isn't that kind of disgusting? You know, one of the ways they do it, they would shake up arrows in a quiver. They would dump it out, and they would look at the way that the arrows were, and they would say, okay, this is where we need to attack or something like that. The position, the size, the color of a dead animal's liver could indicate, you know, a future choice and all that kind of stuff. But what you see here is it's usually a liquid type of thing. A lot of times there would be oil or water in this gold or silver cup, and they would look at the shadows and the designs that you would actually see when you combine all this, and it was supposed to reveal the future. Now, here's the question I have for you. why does Joseph say he uses that cup for divination? Is it bad? I mean, were they guilty just by stealing the cup? That was all that he needed, right? All he needed was to catch them red-handed that they stole the cup. But so why does he make sure that the steward tells them, this is the cup that I use to do divination? I will tell you that divination is it's forbidden in the Bible. You actually see in Leviticus 19:26 that you're not to practice divination or witchcraft. Deuteronomy 18:10-12 says, no one among you is to sacrifice a son or daughter in the fire, meaning human sacrifice. Now check this out. It says, you guys aren't supposed to sacrifice your own children. You're not supposed to practice divination, tell fortunes, interpret omens, practice sorcery, cast spells, consult a medium or a spiritualist, or inquire of the dead. Everyone who does these acts is detestable to the Lord, and the Lord your God is driving out the nations before you because of these detestable acts. Did you catch that? Divination there, the telling fortunes through this, was put right after child sacrifice. I mean, it's pretty clear that you're not supposed to do that. But I want you to understand here that this is more than just a test of if they'll make a stand for a brother. This is a test on if they'll make a stand for God. Remember what happened just a couple of months before, a few months before when they were there? And he hears them. They don't know that he can hear them. And they go, hey, this is God doing this to us. This is a consequence of our own actions. This is because this is what God does. So what does Joseph do? He goes, hey, I have done this through this mystical arts, and he wants to see if they're going to correct him on it. Are you with me on all that? It's one thing to stand up for a brother, but it's another thing to stand up for God. And Joseph is testing, okay, even if it costs a life of slavery, even if it costs you losing your life, are you willing to make a stand for your brother, but are you willing to make a stand for God? And unfortunately, we have to cut the sermon off right here. We don't have time to look and see how they pass these tests, but we'll talk about it next week. But here's the question I have for you this week. Are you willing to make a stand for what really matters, the important things in life? An even better question than that is, are you willing to take a stand for God? When Jesus is praying the night that he's arrested, I want to back up here for a minute before I get into all that. Notice that how Joseph has the steward respond to him. Notice how the first thing he says, why have you repaid evil for good? Look at the last thing. What you have done is wrong. It's all about morality. He has put this little test of standing up for God all in the terms of right and wrong, all in the terms of morality. Now, this is kind of a big deal. It's kind of an important deal. I want you to think about this here for a minute. You need a frame of reference to know right and wrong, don't you? I mean, think about it. You need a frame of reference. Everyone point up. Some of you don't understand the concept of everyone, but that's all right. I'm looking at you. Now, I want you to think here for a minute. When we're pointing that way, why are we pointing that way? Because what's our frame of reference? The ground underneath us, right? You want to know the ironic part? Someone on the exact opposite side of the world is going, no, you're pointing down. Think about it here. Because the earth is your frame of reference. Wherever that is, going the opposite way is up. Now, what you've got here is Joseph. He's given them this test on if they're going to stand up for God, but the test is just dripping in what is right and wrong. Why have you paid evil for good? Why have you done what is wrong? It's all about what the truth is. Do you catch this here for a minute? And he wants to know, are you going to stand up for the truth? And are you going to make a stand for God, even if it means that you're going to be put into a life of slavery, even if it means you're going to lose your own life? I love what Jesus says in John chapter 17. The last night before he's put to death, John 17 records this prayer that he prays as he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. It's just this beautiful prayer. And one of the things he says is he's praying for his disciples, this group of guys he had traveled with for 3 years. He goes, sanctify them by the truth. You know what? You remember what he says is the truth? He says, your word is truth. Jesus, the very night he's put to death, says, sanctify them by the truth, and truth is found here. We know up is up because we're using the earth as a reference. But when it comes to right and wrong, your frame of reference is God. If there is no God, there truly can be no right or wrong. It's just whatever someone wants to be right or wrong. But if God exists, which he does, and if he's all good, which he is, then he is the arbiter of right and wrong. What Joseph is doing here is very subtle. Because he's teaching them, are you going to make a stand for God, and are you going to do what's right? and it's significant. So the question is, are you willing to make a stand for God? Are you willing to let your morality be determined by this and not just the way you want it to be? Are you going to be willing to make a stand for God, even if it's not the popular choice, even if it makes your life even a little bit more miserable? Is it worth it? Joseph would say yes. And after 22 years, he's testing to see if they're going to call him on this. I mean, honestly, that's what he's doing. He's testing them to go, are they going to make a big deal and go, wait, you found this out through witchcraft? Oh, sure. And we'll see how they respond next week. So let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you for this incredible life of this incredible man. Thank you for the wisdom and the discernment that Joseph has had as he has tested these brothers in multiple ways and in so many different ways. And as he puts these last two tests before him, help us to be able to examine our own lives and test ourselves as well. Help us to look at our own lives and examine our own lives and see if we're willing to make a stand for what's right and if we're willing to make a stand for you. When all else fails, your word and you are going to remain. Help us to stand strong in that. For your name we pray. Amen.